Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. I think with this one, we're recording episode 207, but I appreciate every episode, every guest that came on this channel since 2.5 years ago, and the love that you guys are sharing with us outside the network. 2 million views every 7 days. I really appreciate how this channel that I initially started as a coffee conversation with people, and now it turned out to be more of a conversation piece across the globe. We've got audience from every country around the world now, and I'm really grateful for every one of them. I really appreciate that. And thanks for being with me. Today, I have the honor and pleasure to have with me Mark Halpern. Mark is from Toronto, from what I'm hearing. So we're neighbor practically. I am in Mississauga. So therefore, today I'm speaking to somebody local. I will always celebrate this because I don't get to talk to people from around the region here often. And as we promised each other before we started the recording, we're going to be telling some stories to begin with. Mark, I started this channel 2.5 years ago as literally a coffee conversation. Before COVID, I was known to, like everybody else, to go out to have coffee with people, to meet people for lunch. And during and post-COVID, people got shy. They don't want to do that often anymore. And they prefer to have conversations over cameras, video cameras, etc. So I started recording them. And hence, in June 2023, I started the first podcast. And it was terrible.
When you're going out for coffee, Robin, first of all, I'm glad to see you're not 340 pounds having all that, you know, coffee and bites with people. But what were you were just having conversations. Where were you taking it? What was the point behind those conversations?
So the conversation was about getting to know people. I mean, I believe truly in building relationships that not necessarily leads to a financial outcome. I never looked for that. Is it a side benefit? Perhaps, but not my primary focus. It was more to get to know people. And throughout the years and using connection on LinkedIn and followers, I built a reputation for that. I'm a connector of people. I love to get to know people, and everybody I've met in my life still, you know, people would say, well, 30,000 connection, over 30,000 connection. That's the first question I get asked. Do you know them? Yes, I do. And I send birthdays, wishes to all of them on their birthdays. So it's not a magic, it's effort. And I take effort in getting to know people.
And in terms of your background, family, spouses, children, how'd you make a living? I mean, coffee, you have to pay for the coffee. So I'm assuming you had
business. Up till November. So my story is, and I've done several podcasts on this one, so I won't bore the audience with this one, but I'll give you the 100,000 foot level. I landed an immigrant in Canada in the early 90s, 1990, actually. I'm from Beirut. I was brought up in the civil war in Lebanon, and I left the country with a huge PTSD as a young teenager or a young man. And I landed in Canada. And so I found my way through the business world. And in November last year, or October last year, I left the corporate world after working in the corporate world for almost 40 years. And now I run a company called N49 Network. I am a fractional CRO. And I do the Localization Fireside Chat podcast as part of that effort, if you will. Hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And when you came to Canada, did you have family here, or you were young?
No, I did not have any family. Brought me. I'm the oldest in 5 kids, family, and mom and dad at the time. Landed here, the 7 of us. Did not know where to go. I ended up living in a basement of a church in Fredericton, New Brunswick. We landed in Montreal, but I just didn't like living in a big city. The second day, actually, I took another flight with the family to New Brunswick. You know, looked where we're going to stay, looked it up in the yellow pages in the airport.
Wow. It's the real immigrant, you know, beginning, humble beginning story. And it's amazing. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm so happy and proud to be Canadian, and what this country has offered and afforded to us. We did not have before. People, you know, we don't want to get into it right now, but the lives that changed because I came to Canada is amazing.
Well, you know what? We have a similar family origins, Robin, in that my father, who was born in Poland, came on a boat 1927, landed at Pier 21 in Halifax with my grandmother and his younger brother. He was only like 6 years old at the time. And they took a train to Manitoba, to Winnipeg, Manitoba, and came with nothing and knew nobody and was embraced by the community and built a life there and, you know, had another brother there. And they had to go to university and professionals. And somehow, you know, the seashore here in Canada was really a bastion of safety, because without that, I wouldn't be here and neither would be my family and my children.
And I love, I don't know, my family is in Nova Scotia. Mom and dad are still living in Nova Scotia. They live in Truro. And I love going to Halifax, Pier 21. There was a conference that takes place once a year in that area. They build a conference center near Pier 21, and it's still there. And the pictures of the new immigrants landing still like on the walls. It's like an amazing place to go visit and see. And the boats still dock there now, like the big cruise ships, they still dock in that area. Amazing part of history of this country.
That is for sure. And more history to come.
More history to come. So if you don't mind, I want to welcome you to the channel. And thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for going with me on the journey of getting to know each other and tell the audience your story, Mark.
Absolutely.
As we start on this channel, everybody gets the question. Everybody's got a story. Why don't we start with this one? You've already alluded to it. If you don't mind telling us your story.
Yeah, absolutely. It was my birthday last week. I turned 64.
Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I'm the youngest of four boys. I was the baby. And my family grew up in Ottawa and then in Toronto, where my father, of blessed memory, was a structural engineer for the Department of Defense for the federal government. And unfortunately, he died suddenly at the age of 50 in 1974 of a heart attack. And I was the youngest of four boys at the time, and my mother had to go back to work to support her family. And the reason for that is he was a busy engineer, and like lots of busy people, you know, there was no will, there were very little savings, no life insurance. So it was very, very hard for us. And we had to develop a struggle muscle, you know, just to, and I, by the way, I'm grateful for having a struggle muscle. You know, today the challenge with kids is you want to give them everything, but you don't want to entitle them, and you want them to, you know, so it's a very happy dance there. So we had to develop a struggle muscle. And fortunately we all did very, very well and went into professional practices, of which I have a company called wealthinsurance.com here in Toronto, but where we do business across the country. And what I noticed is that the majority, I would say probably 80% of business owners and entrepreneurs and affluent families, you know, are also busy, and they don't have things all organized, Robin. Like my family, you know, they're busy looking after everything and everyone else, that they don't have basic wills or, you know, structures in place. So I started in my business in 1991, and it's really to do three things. One is estate planning, making sure people's financial architecture and financial furniture line up with reality. Second area is tax mitigation strategies, because people are paying a lot of tax, and there are ways to actually keep that tax for families. And then the third thing is philanthropy. And I think, Robin, this is going to be an area we're going to love talking about, which is we love helping people go from success to significance or create family legacies, often just by converting tax into charity. And it's an area that a lot of people don't know about.
You know, first, you know, I read your story. It's amazing. And, you know, it's always been the case, isn't it? Where life early on in for all of us, not just you and me, for all of us, life early on sort of like engineers what comes next for us. You know, your dad died at 1974 at age 50, and here you are, 11 at the time. Your father's gone. Can you tell the audience what did life look like in the week after?
Wow, that's a good question, and the first time I'm sort of asking. First of all, when you're 11 years of age, you don't know from something called death. The only connection you have to death is what you see on television, on detective stories or movies where somebody dies. But now actually being foisted into a situation where you're at a funeral and people are speaking about your father and looking at the children and saying, you know, and coming to your house and sort of being and sending their condolences, it was a very surreal experience. And also one that I think what really gets to is that it's a permanent experience. I think that for a lot of us, we think that, yes, things change and we move on, but there are certain things that are permanent that can't go back, such as death. So I think that was a very big pivot point you know, in my life. And fortunately, I had three older brothers and an amazing mother who she passed away almost 20 years ago. But she was a tremendous cheerleader and she had no choice but to step up. You know, she was a stay-at-home mom. And now all of a sudden she had to go back into the workforce and, you know, take the subway every morning down to Yonge and Wellesley. And we used to, you know, the bonus of getting your driver's license was now you got to drive mom in the morning to the subway and pick her up as well. That was the sort of the responsibility. But I'd say that's permanence. And also it's not having somebody to lean on, to go to for help, or, you know, it's part of a bridge that gets cut off, and you become very independent and very resourceful and very self-reliant. And I'm grateful for that.
You know, most people, when they go through something like this, you know, you can call me child of war, I guess, in my case. You know, one of the stories I keep telling about is at the age of 16, when I was living in the suburbs of Beirut, suffering from all the bombing, I had to figure out how to build a bunker for the family in the backyard of the house. And that was an experience on its own. But most people, when they go through something like this, Mark, they got two options, either run away from it or run toward it and try to fix it. What made you run toward it?
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, they say that if there's a fire, right, you're supposed to run away from something, right?
Yeah.
When there's fire, you run away. But if, let's say, you're working in a submarine and there's a fire, you run towards it because you have no chance. You can't run away from it. That's it. You're in that submarine. So I'd say that I really did believe, first of all, I was a very religious person in the sense that I did believe in God. You know, I believe that there was, you know, divine providence, and there things happened for a reason, even though I was only 11 years of age. And I also very much believe that, you know, it's brought down that God has a very special place for orphans and widows, right? It's almost like a special protexia that hangs over you. And basically I had no choice. You have to just sort of go through it. They say when you're going through the fire, just keep walking, you know, you got to just keep doing it. So
yeah, that's right.
And there's lots of trips and falls along the way, and stubbing your toe and scabbing your knee. But, I tell my kids all the time that there's only two types of people. There's winners and there's learners. There's no such thing as a loser. You, the more failures you have, it's your failures that make you successful. It's the failures that make you the person that you need to become. And I learned that, I guess, just through life and my family. But also, I had a lot of great mentors along the way too, Robin. And I think that's something hopefully we'll touch on.
Absolutely. Now, your tagline, less tax, more legacy. How much of that was related to your father?
I wouldn't say the tax part. I say the legacy part is more related to my father. I'd say that, you know, like you go through life and, you know, you go to school and you get a job, and you get a job in order to make money, in order to support your family, in order to buy stuff and take trips. And like, I kind of got to a point where in my career, it was, you know, I was doing very well. I was in the marketing and promotions business with a guy named Miles Nadell. I don't know if you know who Miles Nadell is. He's a very well-known philanthropist and a guy in marketing. And I was kind of like, is this it? Like, that's it? Like, just make a lot of money and have an expense account? And I was feeling that there was something that was missing, you know, sort of in my life. And I really did feel that at the end of the day, it's not the money that you make. It's the people you touch and the legacy you leave behind, the values, those morals, those ethics. You make the world a better place, and each person is a universe unto itself. Every person you meet is a potential opportunity to help somebody, to make them feel better, or to learn from them, right? So I'd say the legacy part was clearly part of it. The tax part, Robin, was really that, you know, imagine if you were somebody working in your garage and you came up with the cure for cancer. You know, you would be so excited, but who do you go to? Who do you tell the story to? And who's going to believe you with that story? So I don't have the cure for cancer, but there are so many strategies that Canadians don't know about. Professional advisors and also charities to help people create legacies, often just by converting tax into charity. And when I notice that those two markets are not telling the story, it means that the average Canadian doesn't know it. So that's really where the less tax comes about. You know, instead of just sort of going through the, you know, the motions where you're told, hey, it's right now, it is tax season, pay this check.
Yeah, I know, it's April.
Right, we got to know that there are ways that people, just by doing some planning, can be able to keep a lot more of theirs. So if you save tax, it means you could also be more philanthropic because that money can now be used for very, very positive purposes.
You know, for the audience, at the age of 32, Mark suffered a three-story fall. And I can't pronounce this one. Mispacha magazine called it a pivot from chasing success to building significance. Can you talk a little bit about this, Mark? I know it's a traumatic, probably. Yeah.
It's not so traumatic. I'll tell you why, because it's
what happened.
You go through life. What happened was I was going through life. Things were good, making money. I majored in pleasure, Robin. I was quite, I was a connoisseur in pleasure, and that could be, physical parties, good times. It was all good times, and as I said, there was something calling inside of me that was not being satisfied. I was filling myself with a lot of finite pleasures and not the infinite type, or the ones that are the ones that really address your soul. And even though what I was feeling on the inside and what I was doing on the outside was a contradiction, I was not mature enough to sort of step up and, make some changes in my life. So I had a dinner party in September of 1993. I managed to have a very bad accident where I fell off an apartment balcony, and I fell three stories. And it wasn't witnessed. I was aware of it. I was aware of the entire thing as it was happening. And I was taken to the hospital, where I spent 31 days in the hospital. I had fractured my right ankle. It was a very bad fracture that required surgery. I had a dislocated left foot. I had a compression fracture in my back. Basically, it got my attention. I had no place else to go. I was living on my own, right? I had a nice girlfriend. And now all of a sudden, I was very reliant on other people. And it got my attention. A lot of people think, oh, wow, Mark had this accident and he changed his life because of it. But the reality is I was changing my life prior to that. This was just the thing that sort of got me to get my attention. But every year, Robin, you'll like this. I think that was really a turning point. And every year on the anniversary of that accident, I make a big celebration to publicly thank God, okay? And to thank him for not only pushing me, but also catching me and giving me the opportunity to take what was always inside of me and now be able to use it for good, like the business that we're in, like building a family. We have, thank God, we have five children, grandchildren, they're married. I do a lot of teaching, both, privately mentor. I have a whole mentoring program called Power of Platinum, where I mentor hundreds of advisors in the financial field to become experts in what I do, or in philanthropy, or to be better heads of their households. I have a lot to be grateful for, so I want to pass it back.
One of the things I've learned about you is that you talked about Dr. Paul Goldstein as a mentor and a model. He's a Holocaust survivor. What did he teach you about resilience and what you couldn't probably learn on your own anywhere else after what you've just told me? I mean, so many learning experiences you've been through by then, probably.
Well, listen, I've been involved in my business for about 10 years, and I was in a bit of a road, like in a crossroads, where I was going, where I was going to be living, etc. And I heard about this Dr. Paul Goldstein from one of his clients, who said his biggest attribute was his integrity. He was known for his integrity. So I said, maybe I could meet him and he'll, we could do some joint work together, or he could mentor me. So I decided to cold call him, Robin. And, he was very terse with me on the phone. He was busy. And I wanted to meet with him. And he basically told me he did not have time to meet. So most people would go ahead and just so say, okay, so sad, too bad. And you'd hang up the phone. But I said, Paul, listen, I'll meet you anywhere at any time. Just give me half an hour. So he said, okay, you sound like a nice young man. He says, I'll meet you, but it's on my terms. I said, great. So he told me to meet at a track behind an ice skating rink in Forest Hill. He said, meet me there Sunday morning at 9:30. He says, I like to walk. We'll walk and talk. And I said, fantastic. So I told my wife, I was very excited. I went to the meeting and I met Paul. Anyway, 10 and a half miles later, we walked for 4.5 hours, Robin. I was bruised. I actually had bruises on my thighs because I wasn't prepared for this. 10 and a half miles later, we started walking and talking, and that lasted for over 25 years, such to the point that he was one of the top advisors in the world in his business, which is the same as mine. And I actually became the succession plan for him, that when he died last February, a year ago February, I am the successor to his business and to his clients. So Who'd have thought? The lesson there is don't hang up the phone. You know, you have a situation like that and somebody turns, keep trying. But he, as a Holocaust survivor, was a force of nature. And to answer your question, he also came to the shores of Canada with nothing from Belgium and was hidden in the Holocaust as a 10-year-old and abused and not a very good situation. And what happened was he taught me skills that I was not aware of that really could be used by anybody and put into practice. So for instance, one of his big ideas, Roman, is he loved boxing. He was a boxing fan. And he was actually in the Canadian Olympic team in weightlifting when, you know, back in the 50s. So he loved boxing, and he used a beautiful story of a fight that was done with Archie Moore against Yvon Duray. He was a Nova Scotian, and it was in Montreal. And Archie Moore was the reigning world champion, and he was fighting against this huge Canadian, who, of course, the crowd was in his favor. And they got into the fight, and Yvon Duray, who's the challenger, knocked out Archie Moore, the reigning champion of the world, every single round, knocked him down. And Archie got up, okay? And, you know, imagine every single round. You can actually look at it online on YouTube. You can actually see the fight in black and white. And then eventually, when he saw that Yvon Duray was weakening, he got out of sort of his funk, and he went after the guy, and he hit him down, knocked him out, and he retained his world heavyweight championship. So what's the message there, okay? And you asked that in life, we are all going into a boxing ring. It's life. That is called life. And when you're in a boxing ring, you are going to get hit. And, you know, it's about how you take those hits, but you're going to get hit. And what happens is you're also going to get knocked down. Everyone gets knocked down. And the reality is it's okay to get knocked down. And you can stay down for a while. You've got 10 seconds, but eventually you got to get up. And that's what Archie Moore did. And I think the lesson for me is, in life, you're going to get knocked down. Just don't get knocked out. A lot of people go through life and they get knocked down and they stay down and then they get knocked out. And then their life is totally different from what it should be. So you asked about Paul. That's just one of so many pieces of beautiful wisdom that he shared with me.
No, this is like, you know, I've got this thing on my email signature. I've had it for many years, is never give up and, you know, go around, go through if you have to, but never give up. You always find a way. And it's just people articulate that in a variety of ways. But I love that boxing example that you gave, Mark, where, you know, you fall down, you get up, you fall down, you get up. And in the process, you're learning and you're trying to define or formulate a strategy on how to win in the end. So I love that. Thanks for sharing.
I appreciate it. I have others. But the other thing about Paul being a force of nature is after being successful for 40 years in my industry, he went back to school at the age of 80 to get his master's degree at U of T, where he finished with the first A+ in the past 6 years out of the entire class. And then he got his PhD at age 86, and then at age 88, he had his first academic book published by Cambridge Scholars Press, an academic publication, at age 88. I mean, you're 80, we're going to Florida, right? We're going to Daytona.
That's right. Go golfing or somewhere.
Go golfing. He continued, and he said that he wanted on his gravestone to quote a quote from a great Greek general by the name of Pericles that says it's not, he said that the quote, and I don't want to mess it up. It's not what you make. It's basically what you engrave into the lives of others. It's like, basically, it's not about engravings. It's about what you give into other people's lives. That's the true test and the true success of an individual. And Robin, you're a perfect example of that with all what you do and all the people that you speak to, and obviously the how you build everybody up from your podcast.
You know, it's very fundamental that, you know, as a human being, you know, everybody I interviewed on this channel, it feels like I'm getting to know their life, and they're taking that learning and pass it on to everybody who watches, listens, and interact with that life. And again, some people view it in different ways. Some people view it as a marketing piece and they want to tell their business, they want to carry it as a business card to others. But the more fundamental ones, in the way they see it as a philosophical thing, is they see it as, I'm telling a story, hoping people would learn from it, hoping people will impact them in a certain way to affect their life in a positive way in the future.
100%.
And that's the objective at the end of the day. If we don't learn from each other, and some people, and the learning can come in a variety of ways. You can go to school, you can learn it. You can go, you know, we're learning being till the day we die, pass from this world. We're continuously learning. It doesn't matter with the age. And Dr. Goldstein is the example, one of the examples in this. And there's many of them that they go, even today, people graduating from colleges and universities at the age of 90. I mean, it's becoming more of a norm now that people want to continue learning. It's in their DNA to continue learning.
Well, I think the way that we do that is you can do your own learning and being self-taught. But I really believe that it's about passing the torch to the next generation. And the way we do that is through mentorship. I've been blessed to have had many people like Dr. Paul Goldstein of blessed memory invest in me just completely, you know, without any return, right? And others. And why would I not take that wisdom, that information, that knowledge, and my own knowledge, and not pass it along to somebody else to help them? I mean, that's really what it's all about. And Robin, I just found the quote from Pericles. If you don't mind, I'm going to say it.
Sure, yeah.
I think it's what he has on his tombstone. It says, "What you leave behind is not what is engraved on stone monuments, but what is woven into the lives of others."
Powerful.
And it is so powerful because, you know, that's the truth. That is the
powerful
truth. Yeah.
Hey, Mark, tell me, how does your Jewish faith weaves into all of this? It sounds like not just a background, it's a load bearing. It sounds like it's carrying you forward.
100%. Look, again, it comes back to, you know, if somebody would not eat, you didn't eat food, and you could go a few weeks without eating until, you know, your body will sort of die. If you don't feed yourself, you die. You starve, and there's a body and a soul. And if you feed your body, it survives. If you don't, it dies. But the soul also requires food. It requires food as well. The challenge is that we take finite things and we try to feed our infinite soul with this finite food. And it's not really satisfied. It's not happy because it needs infinite food. And what happens is you keep feeding it this finite food and it's never satisfied. So we keep ramping up what we need. We then can binge watch Netflix, or we can sleep, or we can, in other words, we constantly, drives us crazy by not fulfilling that. You know, we really believe that, you know, that the world was created, there is a God, and he created a beautiful world from nothing. I mean, again, I'm not a big evolutionary person. Evolution to me is something that allows somebody to very much believe that you started off as an amoeba and a frog and you evolved throughout all the, it's impossible. You can't get these teeth that are inside of a mouth when you're a baby that come out, you know, several months. It's just impossible. So wakey wakey. Okay. So it's just how babies are born. Okay. Like it's not a fluke.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you know that there's a creator, then he must have created the world for something, and the key is to find out what is the blueprint, you know, everything comes with a set of instructions, and the most complicated thing in the world is life, right?
That's right.
So if there's a guidebook for that, and it's all about having the best life and being the happiest, wouldn't it make sense to invest a little bit of time in finding out what the instruction book says and how to have that life? And unfortunately for a lot of people, they might get that when they're a little kid, and then they'll graduate when they get to baptism or, you know, bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah. And now that's their graduation out as opposed to their graduation in. And then they go through their entire life making all their decisions based on whatever they ate that day or the Pepsi that they drank, as opposed to, you know, what am I here for? And what's the purpose? And I'd say in life, it's a very good thing for your listeners who are young people and business people. We're climbing the ladder of life, right? You're climbing. Now, imagine you get to be 80 or 90 years of age and you get to the top of the ladder and you go, oh no, I meant to lean the ladder against that building. What am I doing here? And by that time, you know, it's too late. So I'd say it's very important early on that, you know, we need to invest in three things. We need to invest in our physical health. You got to take care of yourself because that's your car that gets you places, right?
Yeah.
You have to invest in your financial life. So you must have things organized and do the best that you can working with professionals or having a great team. And then you also have to work on your relationships, which includes your spiritual life. And if you don't have these three things, like sort of the three-legged stool here, then what's going to happen is it's going to fall over. Kind of like, you know, the perfect example is the Titanic. Like Titanic was a ship that would never, never sink, right? We know that.
That's what the builder said.
That's it. And they were on deck drinking champagne and listening to music. And guess what? There was something called an iceberg that hit at the back of the boat and took them all down. All of us have a potential iceberg in our life. Like it could be health, could be finances, it could be your spiritual life, relationships. And the time to deal with all this stuff is obviously while the sun is shining. It fulfills me, my whole family. You know, today is Friday. So tonight is my favorite day of the year, which is the Sabbath, Robin. And that means that I get 25 hours of a spa, spiritual spa. I get to turn off my cell phone, my computer. I can be with my family. We have guests over, good food, good drink, good conversations, prayer. And again, it's not, you know, people have a false sense of what prayer is. It's people look at it as, you know, it's a joke or, you know, they see it. You know what? It's different for everybody.
It's almost soul cleansing.
It is. It's a spirit. I look at it. It's a spiritual spa that I get that gives me strength to manage the next 6 days of the week, right? Which is so demanding and so, you know, and so physical and not spiritual at all. Yeah.
We call it hand-to-hand combat in business.
It really, Robin, it really, and you have to be a mercenary, man. You need to
hold. That's right.
And that's why if you invest in yourself and you invest in that and taking care of yourself in those three areas and have, you know, a spiritual part of your life, I call it, you'll save yourself from that sucking hole that tries to pull you down. It allows you at least to be a little higher up on that funnel so that when the wind comes, at least you don't fall crashing out.
True.
You fall down a few ladders and then come back up again.
Now, one of the things that you talk about is the disinheriting the tax man. Now, we both live in Canada, and I think that conversation never really make it, you know, in the too much in the public domain, because there's that inherited sentiment, at least that's my feeling, in the country, that if you talk about ways to save cost or save money on taxes, it's somehow it's not legal or it's not perhaps moral to do that, because we all have the obligation to pay taxes. I keep saying, you know, I just want to pay my fair share and I don't want to pay a cent more than that. But that's, you know, even that, people sometimes frown upon it. Now, you talk about three beneficiaries, RA, family, and charity, and you get to pick two. Talk a little bit about that.
So first of all, I just want to touch on what you said before. You must pay taxes. We need taxes. That's the social fabric that keeps the whole enchilada going, right? But I love this quote, which is that there's no law that says that you have to leave a tip. There's no law that says you have to leave a tip. And the government has introduced about 25 different pieces of legislation since 1995 to make it more favorable for Canadians to give to charity and reduce their taxes. Why? Because they know that they're not capable of sustaining all the social fabric in our country. Therefore, they're asking generous Canadians to help along the way. There are very much, we don't have a lot of what I call tax shelters or tax havens left in Canada. As a matter of fact, they've taken away a lot of these. But we still have six. There's still six that are sort of sitting out there that are all part of the Tax Act. Number one is your principal residence, Robin. When you buy it, you sell it, you don't pay tax for now, right? So that would be one thing. Secondly, TFSAs. You know, you can put up to $7,000 a year away and it grows tax-free and you can access it tax-free. So, but again, it's only $7,000. Lottery winnings. A lot of people buy lottery tickets. Don't buy it in the States because you'll be taxed on it. But in Canada, it's tax-free, right? Another thing that's also is tax-exempt is if you're a business owner, you can multiply something called the lifetime capital gains exemption between your spouse and your children. And each one is $1.25 million. So you can save a lot of taxes that way as well. Another thing where that it's, you know, sort of sheltered from tax is philanthropy. Giving money to charity. You can use charitable donations, Robin, to mitigate up to 75% of your net taxable income every year. And any amounts over and above that, you can carry forward for up to 5 years. And a lot of Canadians don't know that on death, if you leave charity in your will, for every $2 you leave to charity in your will, you turn a dollar of tax into a dollar of legacy. and most people are not incorporating strategic philanthropy into their estate plans. And the last tax shelter left, or the last tax exempt application, is tax exempt life insurance. Insurance is still something that's available for Canadians, where yes, you can get it to protect your family, but at the same time, you can get it to protect your money, because you can actually have your money grow tax-free, you can access that money tax-free, and you can pass it along tax-free as well. It's almost like a no-limit TFSA for yourself or for your business. So those are things that if people sat down with a professional advisor and sort of had those discussions, you, Robin, would find ways to pay the minimum amount of tax, but at the same time, keep a lot more sitting in your pocket.
You know, for our global audience, Mark is referring to TFSA, that's tax-free saving account in Canada, we call them, where you're allowed to invest a certain amount of money. The government allocates $7,000 a year, and there's a cap on it since the beginning of the program till now. You're allowed to invest that money, and as the investment grows inside of that account, you don't pay taxes on that, so it stays there. And you can withdraw that money from the TFSA account down the road, and you can use that money for your retirement savings as well. So, and I know in the US, you guys have many programs similar to this, like the 401k and a bunch of other things.
The Roth, there's a whole bunch of them. Yeah. Again, there are options available to global audiences, but the key is that you need the right team of professionals sitting down who have a knowledge of this, to help look at your particular situation and determine what would be something that would be of value to you. And working with your professionals, everybody is collaborating, as opposed to sort of just assuming I have to give 50% to the government.
Say I'm a founder. I've built, you know, I don't know if you've looked me up a little bit, but I've built language service companies, you know, for the past 25 years. I've taken small companies from literally less than $1 million in Canada, turned them to $30 million. Canadian companies, sold them, and did that a couple times, three times actually. I'm starting to think about what happens next. So where does a conversation with you usually begins for somebody like me?
It really begins just having a conversation. And
many of our listeners are founders, by the way, and owners. So I'm hoping some of those conversations will stick with my audience and reach out to you.
Oh, that would be great. We definitely have the capacity, and we have great advisors, and we work with people not only across Canada, but also in the United States as well. We have great advisors who are kind of like mini Marks or whatever, that we're aligned in terms of this. But there's no meter running. It's kind of like going to the doctor, Robin. You know, you can't go ahead and give somebody a prescription without having a proper diagnosis. They call that malpractice. So if you're meeting anybody who's showing you a concept or a strategy, you know, this is what it does. Again, if you're an alpha kind of person, then that's what you need to get the conversation started, get it. But really, you have to say, I want to invest a little bit of time with somebody and understand the situation a little bit better. And then basically have them come back to me to make sure we're all on the same page, and then provide their analysis and recommendations. In my world, like I have a meeting I'm going to at 12 o'clock with a very successful real estate person, but what will come out of it is we're going to make sure that we're aligned to say, here's your default. This is where you're at right now without me. And here are all the things, are you happy or not happy, right? Based on that. Well, here are 5, 10, 15, 20 things that we can layer on top of what you're doing. And let's look at the ROI on those versus your default. And then working with you and your professionals, let's figure out what we can incorporate into that planning. And it really is a process, Robin. It's not an event. It's not like instant coffee. But somebody has to be willing to sit down. Now, I'm going to throw this at you, Robin. I'm not going to put you on the spot. But, you know, do you know what your tax will be when you and your spouse, or if you're single, widow, or divorced, you have a tax bill right away? But do you know what your estate tax is going to be if you died?
No, I haven't thought that far.
Great. So most people don't. The first thing that you need to do is to find out what it is, right? Why? Because it might scare the bejeebies out of you and say, what? I didn't know that. Now that at least says, okay, the sun is shining. What can we do now to go ahead and preserve family money for family or for charity or for both? But unfortunately, you know, most people today don't even have a will. Robin. You know, 50% of Canadians don't have a will. And the 50% of Canadians who do have a will, was it done by a professional? Is it up to date? Do they have primary and secondary wills? Yeah. You know, do they look, does it take into account things like probate taxes? Anyway, again, different tax strategies for different jurisdictions, but I would say it's saying, you know what, I want to take care of my family. I am a generous person. I know the government's going to get their piece of meat, but I want to know, how could I do the best to preserve this hard-earned money for my family or causes that I care about? And if you have that desire, then we can definitely have a conversation. And there's no obligation to go ahead and pursue anything, but we have enough confidence that we think.
And for the audience, if you're listening to this and you're interested in the conversation that we're having right now with Mark Halpern, and you want to get a hold of Mark, please reach out to me. I'll make sure that I'll facilitate an introduction. I'm happy to do that. Mark, by the way, I sent you a connection request on LinkedIn whenever you get a chance. It helps when I post these episodes to link you up on LinkedIn as well. I'll tag you with the post that I do after the post.
Well, I see that. I know that you mentioned about having, I'm jealous you have 30,000 connections. I only have 20,000 connections. But that being said, the 20,000 that I have, I don't accept just everybody, as I'm sure you're also, you know, you're selective. And a lot of the people that I have as connections are other professional advisors, you know, who follow me and want to be mentored by me. And I also have a lot of charities that I work with, where we work with a lot of charities across the country and their major donors to create planned legacy giving programs. Again, it's just providing people with wisdom along the way.
Sure. No, I would love to connect with you and amplify the message on your behalf to the audience. That would be great.
And Robin, if I can help you, I would love to be able to give you some insights that maybe you're not aware of.
You know, we're in the same city. Maybe we grab lunch together or something. That would be
at least a coffee, Robin, like the olden days.
Or coffee. Coffee, that'd be good.
I love it. I think that would be great.
You're in the city, right? You're downtown, are you?
I'm in Markham, in the north end of the city. My office is in Markham, and I live in Thornhill Woods.
Okay. Well, on Mondays, normally I go north of the city, so maybe we'll connect near Fairview.
Oh, okay, fine. My office is not far from it. You know what? Let's do that, okay? We'll do something in May. It would be lovely to meet.
Absolutely. We'll connect then. Now, let's...
Without a microphone, no video. We can just, you know, be ourselves.
Just you and I. We may take the old selfie, but that's okay.
For sure.
This is very important for the audience, too. You've put over $100 million into Canadian charities in 2020, since 2020. Can you give us some story around that? And how did you do this? That's very, very important. $100 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's actually an old number. We're over $300 million now, Rob.
Oh, are you? So, okay.
Yeah, we actually have a pretty ambitious goal. We're actually trying to create a national community of 100 professional advisors and charities that, if each of us are creating $10 million a year of new charity or legacy charity, and you have times 100, that's $1 billion a year, Robin. Our goal is to create $1 billion a year every year of charity. And that's what gets me excited every day getting up. And it can be done. We already have about 24 commitments from advisors and charities who are already part of this, which is very exciting. But I'll just give you an example. You've got, let's say somebody, let me tell you about Paul Goldstein. That's a great example.
Okay.
Paul Goldstein, about 15 years ago, he was part of a, he was a big donor for a charity, and he went ahead and he took his CPP, his Canada Pension Plan. That's like your Social Security.
Yeah.
And you receive that. It's taxable. You reinvest it. It's taxed again. And when you die, it disappears. So he took his CPP and he bought a $1 million life insurance policy with it. So the CPP was paying for this policy. Upon his death, that $1 million went to a charity that created a $1 million charitable receipt that saves his estate $500,000 of tax, okay, with just using the CPP. And in his will, he instructed the charity that every year that money should be professionally managed and 5% of that money should go to the charity forever. That means the charity is getting over $50,000 a year forever from the late Dr. Paul Goldstein.
That's a very smart estate engineering.
Very good. It's just moving the shells around. How about this? If you're single, widowed, or divorced and don't have a spouse to roll your assets to, you're in a situation where you're one incident away from a huge tax bill, which means that if you have, let's say, $2 million of RSPs, first thing you have to realize, it's not worth $2 million. It's only worth $920,000 because the government's taking 53.5% of that now or upon your death. So don't think it's $2 million. It's only $920,000. You could actually donate some or all of that upon death at no tax to charity, or while you're alive, donate some of it at a very fractional cost. So again, moving the shells around, figuring out how to do it. If you have an estate tax, that somebody might have an estate tax of $5 million, they maybe will buy insurance to pay the estate tax of $5 million and they'll have a $5 million policy. But if they took out a $10 million policy for pennies on the dollar or for some sort of on a financing strategy, now the $10 million goes to charity and the $5 million becomes charity. Again, just by, as you said, engineering the estate plan.
So what I was doing the research before this call, right? So before this podcast together, and I always do research on people that I'm going to be talking to. One of the goals that you have for 2027 is the moonshot, I called it, the $1 billion a year by 2027. So where is the $1 billion came from a year kind of thing for charity? Do you have like a goal, or is there an objective behind the number?
Yeah, as I said, it's really that being in my business now that I've been in for 35 years and seeing the landscape and seeing the fact that I would suggest 90-95% of professional advisors are not talking about strategic philanthropy as part of a client's estate plan. They're not leaning into it. They're not talking about it. They're not moving the needle on it. Okay. And the charities are also, I would suggest 90% of charities are not talking about planned legacy giving. They're focused on current gifts and not planned legacy giving, which means that if the professionals are not talking about it and the charities are not talking about it, it means that nobody knows about this. So it's kind of like an aha moment for me, seeing that, you know, that without that information, people are missing out on a tremendous way of preserving family money and creating legacies. So I started in this, you know, as I said, I started in the business 35 years ago. We're a very charitable family. We have a word called tzedakah in Hebrew. It's often mistranslated as charity, but tzedakah actually means righteousness or justice. We have an obligation to give back. And there are two ways to give. I can either write a check myself, or I can teach other people how to write checks. And if I teach those people how to write checks, then I can create way more money that way by doing that. So this $1 billion is something, by the way, we've pushed it to 2030. I think you have an old note, but that's when we want to have this underway. But we're really making progress. We have about our commitments from advisors and charities who are part of this. But if we can get 100, there's no reason why we can't be doing $1 billion a year.
Now, you are sitting on the boards of some of Canada's most significant foundations, I heard. And for Canadians who are listening to this conversation with us, between us, Mark, what Canadians right now, the average Canadians, are not understanding correctly about how philanthropy work at scale?
I'm sorry, could you ask the question again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
What does the average Canadian, for instance, in this case, not understand how philanthropy work at scale?
Yeah.
No, they That's understand great, charity, yeah, but they don't so, understand philanthropy at scale.
Beautiful. There are two kinds of people. There's somebody who they give to charity because it's part of their DNA. They learned it through, you know, church, synagogue, mosque. They're givers. And then there are others who didn't. They did not get that education. When that second group realizes that they have a choice where their taxes go, that they can give them to charity, suddenly those people become accidental philanthropists. And they want to start giving, whereas the people who are already giving, because it's part of their DNA, it just means they can give more so they can maximize their impact and minimize their cost. And I'd say that for most Canadians, they give to charity when somebody asks them for charity. For instance, if I went up to you, Rob, and I said, I'm doing the ride on my bike to conquer cancer, and I'm riding my bike to Barrie, will you sponsor me, Rob? And you'd say, sure, send me the link. You'll use your credit card, $10, $50, in your case, $5,000. I'm sure like you would give money to help people. And that's the extent of their philanthropy. But they're not thinking about incorporating strategic philanthropy into their estate plan because they haven't done the work to see what their estate tax is going to be or how much of what they have is actually going to be going to the government. And can we, as you said, very eloquently, can we engineer the estate plan in a more efficient way to be able to keep more of our money or do something for charity? So I'd say that's probably the main reason why people are not on board with this.
Now, one of the things you do, and I admire that about you, Mark, is that your speaking fees at conferences, at events, go straight to charity. That's my understanding. Congratulations, by the way. That's very admirable.
Thank you.
When did you decide to do that? And has it ever cost you?
Ever cost me in what sense?
In terms of money, not time. I mean, time is invested, obviously.
Again, getting back to my religious background, I know where my money comes from, right? It's all determined at the beginning of the year.
Of course.
Rosh Hashanah, right?
We're all standing under the windows of heavens and blessings. That's fine.
There it is. So I realize that I have a business, and thank God it generates money to support my family and do a whole bunch of nice things with it as well. But when I do things for charity, I really want to do it, you know, really purposefully, where it's not something that I'm actually getting money into my pocket, I'm doing good for. So I started charging fees many, many years ago, and I'll speak at events for up to $10,000, Robin. So it's been done many, many times, but those fees will go to either our charitable foundation or to the charity that's bringing me out. So it's kind of like it's a wash. At the same time, I also have a mentoring coaching program for professional advisors for insurance, investment, tax people, and charities. It's called powerofplatinum.com. You can go online to see it, but it's now in its fifth year, and we've had over 200 advisors through the program, and the fees are quite significant, and the fees are actually paid directly to our charitable foundation. So even the members, the advisors involved, are allowing me to create a charitable fund that has hundreds of thousands of dollars in it just by helping these advisors. Now, how do I make money on that? When the advisor wants to do some joint work with me and we collaborate, that's when I get paid. But in terms of those fees, and when I am working with charities and with their donors, we give back to those charities who are partnering with us by way of a donation based on the success of the situation with their donors.
I'd be very happy to continue the conversation with you over coffee later on, and we'll do something in May together. I can't wait. I've got so many ideas rattling through my brain right now after this conversation.
Robin, I'd so much love to. You've been around, and after speaking to, what did you say, 207 people so far you've had on your, so I'm number 208. So I'm glad you got the training wheels off. It's now Mark Halpern after number 208. I want you to take all of that wisdom of yours, and I want to share with you what I'm doing, because I think you could be a very, very important part of, you know, the mission that we're on.
Absolutely. Now, as we wrap this conversation that I would wish I have more time and wish we can do this for 2-3 hours, this is such an enjoyable conversation, getting to know you, what you do, Mark, on various levels, on the estate planning, on the philanthropy work, on the charity work that you do. It's really a pleasure conversation to have.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
If you don't mind, my audience is full of founders and builders and in the language and localization space and technology, AI space. Most of them are thinking right now about growth or how to take their companies to the next level, not necessarily thinking about legacy or what do I do in the future. And, you know, you asked me the question and I'm not there. I probably should have been there years ago. But what do you want to say to them directly?
Yeah, I want to say to them, you know, build, you know, generate income, generate revenue. There are two things that I would like for them to appreciate too. Number one is most of the builders I meet with, and the people, they're very much on the offense. It's building. It's kind of like, you know, right now it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it's remarkable, Robin, that normally the team that wins the cup after a grueling spring is the team that has the best defense, not the best offense, the best defense. And business people are tremendously focused on offense. What we do is we look after the defense. You need the best defenseman, the best goalie. And I feel that a lot of those individuals are remiss that they don't have that. And that's where we really help people. And once you understand that, that allows you to hoist the cup in your own business, in your own life going forward. That's number one. The other thing I would like your founders to know is that you can become a philanthropic entrepreneurial business owner as well and introduce charity into your business that will not only make you feel good and you'll be doing very, very well, but it's a great way of becoming referable. People love to deal with people who are generous. And we have a 10-point strategy document for business owners on how to incorporate strategic philanthropy into their business, leading from, you know, the top executives to the C-suite staff to clients to all the way down the chain to employees. And it's incredible what you can create in your own business with very little heavy lifting to become philanthropic. So I'd say those are two of the key messages that I would want to leave you with.
Now, my last question is, before we wrap it up, you said we live once, but we die twice. Can you unpack that to the audience as we wrap this up?
Yeah, it's to me, it's a very important point that, you know, we live once, obviously, that's stuff, but you die twice. I don't understand that. Most people would say you die once when you stop breathing, but what's the other time? So the other time is that you die a second time when people stop talking about you. They stop mentioning your name. It's very painful to think about.
Yep.
It's shocking. So with philanthropy, with religion, with mentoring, with these things, it's a way, as that Paul Goldstein quote said from Pericles, it really is a way to what you leave behind is not what's engraved in stone monuments, but what's woven into the lives of others. You make a tremendous, tremendous difference. And they say that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, Robin. That's when the weather conditions are perfect. But when there's a wind or there's a tsunami like there is today, the apple doesn't even know it came from a tree. Part of
we fall under an orange tree.
Exactly. But how do we pass along those values? It's through religion. It's through philanthropy. It's both. But you have to have a plan. So when you're climbing that ladder and you get to the top, you go, I leaned it against the right building, as opposed to getting a shock where you don't get a chance to do it again.
Absolutely. Mark Halpern, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you so much, Robin, for having me. And I'm looking forward to our coffee together.
Absolutely. Did this podcast achieve what you had in mind? Or did I miss anything?
No, it's great. First of all, you're a great host and you had great questions. Some of your questions I haven't been asked before. It made me think and sort of make sure that I've got things aligned. And I appreciate very much allowing me to be a part of your community.
I want to thank you so much, Mark, for being part of this conversation. And to the audience, thank you so much for watching us. If you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us on YouTube. If you are listening to us on the audio streaming channels, thanks for listening in. And if you are checking out our blog post, robinayoub.blog, where I summarize these conversations into small consumable pieces of content, thanks for subscribing to the blog post as well. And I want to thank you for following me on this journey and me and my guest today, Mark Halpern. If you need to get a hold of Mark, and again, if you can't reach Mark on his website or his, which we'll include in the description, by the way, I've got all your information, Mark, and or you can't find him on LinkedIn, please reach out to me and I'll facilitate an introduction. I'll be happy to. On my behalf and on the behalf of my respected guest here, Mark Halpern, thanks so much for being part of this conversation, and I will see you at the next episode.